Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, we the various demigods, the directors of this universe, have come to your lotus feet. Please fulfill the purpose for which we have come. You are the witness of everything from within and without. Nothing is unknown to you, and therefore it is unnecessary to inform you again of anything. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 13.3, Kshetra Gyam Chapi Mamavidhi Sarvakshetre Shubharata. The individual souls are proprietors of their individual bodies, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of all bodies. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. The individual souls are proprietors of their individual bodies, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of all bodies. Since He is the witness of everyone's body, nothing is unknown to Him. He knows what we need. Our duty, therefore, is to execute devotional service sincerely, under the direction of the spiritual master. Krishna, by His grace, will supply whatever we need in executing our devotional service. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we simply have to execute the order of Krishna and Guru. Then all necessities will be supplied by Krishna, even if we do not ask for them. Srila Prabhupada ki. Just like to beg the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas present. Thank you. Speak. This is a very nice verse. Coming at the start of a great adventure which is about to happen, the churning of the ocean to produce nectar, as advised by the Supreme Lord Himself. In this verse, the demigods have been praying for some time to the Supreme Lord. They have come to the edge of the milk ocean, and they're petitioning the Lord to intervene. And as usual, between the demons and the demigods, there is a constant struggle. So on this occasion, the demigods, as happens quite frequently, they are not on the winning side, and the demons have the upper hand. So they have decided to petition the Lord to come and establish the demigods in their rightful positions as the rulers of the universe again. So this is a very interesting verse, perhaps full of a few contradictions, but it reveals a great deal about the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The demigods say that as directors of the universe, they have come to the Lord's lotus feet to beg from Him His assistance. So they've come with a prayer in mind, or a particular desire that they would like the Lord to fulfill. However, in the next sentence they go on to say, please fulfill the purpose for which we have come. As you are the witness of everything, from within and without, nothing is unknown to you. Therefore, it is unnecessary for us to inform you again of anything. So in a sense, although they arrive ready to offer a prayer to the Lord, and actually in the previous verses they've mainly been glorifying the Lord. Most of the prayers in the Bhagavatam, you will see that the request part is actually very small. The vast majority of it is glorifying the Lord in an understanding of His actual position, His advancement, His real state, actually, in creation, His position above the three modes of nature. Many prayers will highlight this aspect. And whenever a personality, a demigod, or a demon sometimes, wishes to request anything from the Lord, they first of all supplicate, they offer great prayers, glorifying the Lord. So now finally we're getting to this stage where they sort of hint at requesting something. But you can see the hesitation with which they're putting forward their request. Of course, we understand, as the demigods themselves know, that it is actually unnecessary to inform the Lord of anything. Why? Because He is situated in the heart as a supersoul. So we could ask, what then is the reason for the demigods to come to the milk ocean in the first place? If the Lord already knows everything, and He's aware of everyone's struggles, and He Himself has a plan for who should be in the superior position at any given moment in time, why is the need for one side to petition or promote their particular agenda. Well, this just happens. Sometimes fate is very difficult to understand, and it is very difficult to see the intricacies of the Lord's pastimes, and indeed the intricacies of our own karma. Now, obviously, when we're dealing with devotees, with demons and demigods, we're dealing with exalted persons and very powerful persons. Their pastimes are not the usual pastimes of karma that we may engage in, especially if they happen to appear in the Bhagavatam. No pastimes appear in the Bhagavatam unless they are really ordained by the Lord. So even if a seemingly mundane activity appears to be taking place, which is laced with personal desires, personal motivations, personal agendas, there is always a message, a special meaning, a special reason for why that is taking place. And the Lord's pastimes, as it will be explained later, He desired to engage in a pastime of churning the milk ocean. Although he was quite competent to achieve stability or whatever was required in the universe just by a little click of his fingers, so to say. The Lord, as the super soul, permeates everyone's hearts. Right? That is the definition of the super soul. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto matas smritir jnanam upohanam cha. As explained in the Gita, the Lord is seated in everyone's heart, and from him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So he actually knows everything that is taking place. Now, the different aspects of the Lord are also worth considering. It is explained in the Bhagavatam that Vadanti tat tattva vidas, those who are knowledgeable, those who have understood the truth, not the speculators who will speculate on some aspect of God or some aspect of creation. Tattva vidas, those who are knowledgeable in the absolute truth. Tattvam yaj jnanam advayam, they understand this transcendental knowledge in three different ways. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. It is understood that the Lord manifests in three ways: as Brahman, as Paramatma, and as Bhagavan. So these three are all facets of the Lord. And there are different ways that different devotees, in their specific situations of devotional service or practice, they will relate to the Lord. Relating to the Lord in his Brahman effulgence is a very passive situation. There is little scope for activity there. Most of those who identify with the Lord's impersonal feature are generally looking for liberation of some kind of merging, some kind of liberation when they are free from soshati and kankshati. As the Lord explains himself, sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhyate param. That's the platform where one is free from hankering, distress, duality, illusion. That is actually quite a pleasurable situation relative to our day-to-day understanding. Prabhupada has described that the happiness we experience in this world is sometimes no more than just a relief from distress. We think we're actually so happy. But the analogy that's given, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also quotes this analogy, it's that of a drowning man. A drowning man, sometimes when he's being punished by different governments, some governments use these techniques, they will dunk the man underwater and hold him underneath for some time. And then they'll bring him up for a short period of time. And he'll take a tremendous gasp of breath. And he'll feel relief. He'll feel great bliss. But actually, that's not real bliss. That's simply relief from a very distressful situation before he gets dunked back in again. And at the end of that process, they may interrogate him further. So that's sometimes the situation in this material world. It's a very dangerous place. It's a very troublesome place. And the pleasures that we receive, first of all, they're largely ordained. As Prahlad Maharaj explains, that no one actually needs to endeavor for pleasure. Pleasure comes automatically, just as distress comes automatically. Dogs don't endeavor too much for pleasure. Yet generally, if you see a dog, they're quite happy. They're jumping around, you know, they're eating something, they're going sniffing this, sniffing that. They also have a great deal of distress. especially if you go to India. You will see the dogs. They're emaciated. People throw things at them. They're fighting amongst themselves. It's actually a tough life. Even if we look at a dog in this country, we think it's doing quite nice, nice glossy coat, pedigree chum. Actually, it's quite a tough life. The dog is suffering in so many ways. But still, somehow, that suffering comes to him because it's ordained, and also pleasure comes to that particular animal. So this applies to all people. So pleasure and distress, they're both sides of the same coin. It's the same coin of material attachment. And this is why the elevated personalities, they try to not so much change the side of the coin. They don't want to move from the side of distress to happiness. That's generally the job of the Karmakandis. They want to actually remove that coin altogether and actually replace it with pure transcendental situation and awareness. Because in that situation, the actual distress and the so-called happiness, the so-called flickering happiness, is completely absent. And it's replaced with whatever the object of that particular devotee's meditation. In the case of the impersonalist meditators, they want freedom and they want liberation and to merge with the Brahman sometimes. So the Lord awards them that, if they have practiced their processes sufficiently well. So then there are many yogis and jnanis who meditate on the super soul feature of the Lord. And they engage in tremendous types of meditation. In the Bhagavad Gita, a whole series of complicated activities is described. One sits in a very sanctified place on a firm seat that is neither too hard nor too soft, stares at the tip of their nose, and engages in a whole process whereby their meditation gradually becomes focused on the Supreme Lord. But after a lengthy process of detaching oneself from one's senses. Now, detaching from one's senses is very difficult. Generally, meditators will try to nullify the actions of the senses. They will neglect the inputs that are coming to them. Our different organs are constantly providing the mind with inputs. The eyes are seeing some pretty scene. The nose smells some fragrance, etc. We can go on. But the transcendental use of those senses is something else. Now, most people's senses are disturbed in that way, in the materialistic way. So therefore, practitioners who are engaged in a yogic process, they ignore the sensory inputs that are coming in. And they become situated in a very sort of trance-like state, where the mind is very much controlled, the senses are controlled, and they no longer act, even if the senses provide some impulse. So this is a very difficult process, and therefore many people do not manage. This is why Arjuna says to Krishna after his lengthy description that this process seems very difficult to me. I find the mind is more difficult and it's more difficult to control because it is more turbulent than the wind. How can I actually achieve success in this process? And his words are obviously very relevant to us, for us, because our qualifications are somewhat less than Arjuna's in terms of his abilities, his adhikar, his qualities, and the sheer amount of blessings he was constantly receiving from the saintly persons. His situation is something different to ours. So he declares that this process is very difficult. Now, of course, Krishna goes on to, as part of his lila of explaining all the different processes that are available, he explains, but out of all of those yogis, one who surrenders to me and focuses on me, making me the soul activity and meditation of their lives, he's successful. Yogi naam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate omam samayuktatmatomataha. One who engages in my service with faith, with shraddha, he becomes very dear to me. He's the highest of all the yogis. So for such a person, there are different, this is now a different type of yoga to that which most people would describe. This meditation on the super soul is directly a meditation on Krishna. And the super soul will manifest in different ways. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, I think, second canto, that the yogis, when they meditate on Krishna, some conceive of the Lord as being a form one thumb high. For some it is a form 8 inches high. This is a conceptual form of the Lord. And they actually visualize him in their meditation. And the Lord manifests increasingly as that meditation increases. We see that in Narad Muni's life. He was meditating on the Lord, and almost immediately after he began his journey, it is described that the Lord appeared on the lotus of his heart without delay. A very wonderful manifestation there. Now, that type of manifestation is obviously the highest of the personal meditations. And anyone can really attempt that meditation because the Lord is situated in everyone's heart. That's a special feature of the Lord, one of his glorious attributes, that although the super soul is one, he expands and is perceived in different bodies. It is not so much that there are many different super souls running around, all collectively as one. It is clearly explained that there is super soul is one, but he manifests in different positions, in different situations, just as, although the sun is one, but if you have a number of mirrors, the mirrors all appear to contain a sun. So the presence of the Lord manifests to one who has a very clear mirror of the heart. It's a very powerful analogy because we always speak about chanting as a method of cleansing the dust from the mirror of the heart. So when that mirror is fully cleansed and it's sparkling, it actually reflects the glory of the Lord. That is its specific quality. Now then, of course, Paramatma realization is there, and then Bhagavan realization is there. Understanding of the Supreme Lord in his fully personal feature. Now in this Bhagavan feature, higher types of interaction are possible. Higher rasas are possible. And the Bhagavan feature is very interesting, because the Lord actually, although he's called Bhagyavan, full of opulence, he will actually voluntarily give up different opulences for the sake of pastimes. Obviously we know the Lord is full of knowledge, full of all fame, beauty, renunciation, etc. Now if we look at some of the pastimes of the Lord, especially in Canto 10, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book, if the Lord exhibits all of those opulences, it would make the pastimes very difficult to carry out. The Lord will voluntarily give up some of those attributes, not under the influence of Mahamaya, but under the influence of Yogamaya. He will permit some of those qualities to be covered for a period for the sake of nice pastimes. So when the Lord is, for example, playing with his cowherd boys, and if you imagine they're playing hide and seek, and one person has to find the Lord, or the Lord has to find the other boys, if the Lord happens to act on his omniscient potency at that particular moment in time, it would make the game very boring. If the Lord already knows everything, that pastime wouldn't be of much pleasurable capability for either the Lord or the devotees in that pastime. If the Lord is supremely powerful, how is it that he's running in fear from Mother Yashoda? These are aspects we'll see in the Lord's pastimes, and they bewilder the great sages. By him, the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, just as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. This is how the Bhagavatam begins. Tejo vari mridam yatha vinimoyo mayo yatra trisarga mrisha. The Supreme Lord is always transcendental, and he has the capability to totally bewilder anyone and everyone. The only way to actually understand his glories is to surrender to him. And then the Lord himself gives that direction from within the heart. So, coming under and entering into the Lord's Yogamaya potency is not a privilege that the Lord gives out willy-nilly. It's actually a very rare and a very precious thing. Because as it's explained in the Nectar of Devotion, it conquers Krishna. Pure love conquers Krishna and makes him subservient to the devotee. Now, the demons are always looking for an opportunity to make the Lord subservient. This is their... sometimes this is their agenda. We read in Canto 7, the great adventures of Hiranyakashipu, how he prayed to Brahma, thinking that as Brahma was the foremost created being in this universe, he actually took him to be the foremost being. And he wanted him to make him immortal so that he could kill his eternal enemy Vishnu. Now, what a foolish propaganda. It's completely silly. The idea that Adikavaya, one who himself is created by the Lord, is now going to empower someone to kill the source of his own creation. This shows the great illusion that Hiranyakashipu was under. Obviously placed there for the sake of the Lord's pastimes. But still, that illusion comes. Now, for devotees, and the demigods are of course devotees. We do understand that they are devotees. Their intentions are not always pure devotional service, as we see from time to time. The exploits of Indra are well known, the exploits of the other demigods. Generally, there's a sequence. The demigods, when they fail to achieve something or they're feeling oppressed, they go to Brahma. Brahma then, when he decides, when he understands that it's the time for the Lord to appear, paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge, when he understands it, that it's that time for the Lord to appear, he goes to the milk ocean. This is almost an exact rerun of Krishna himself appearing in as he does when he comes as the son of Devaki. And it's a wonderful pastime which happens again and again. And it's almost identical. The Lord's pastimes are going on eternally at some place in this material creation. So of course the demigods, being devotees of the Lord, they wish to enjoy and they wish to allow their subordinates, their dependents, the other species of life, human beings, etc., to enjoy, but in a connection with Krishna, in a connection with Vishnu. Therefore in the Gita, this aspect of cooperation between men and demigods is emphasized. By cooperation between men and demigods, through this performance of yajna, etc., prosperity will reign for all. So the demigods serve the Lord, and the Lord generally wishes to place the demigods in the ruling position. Why? Because it is actually the best situation for law and order and a progression in devotional service for the inhabitants of the universe. Under the superintendence of the demigods, as opposed to the demons, prosperity can happen because people gradually engage in some kind of activity. And there are obviously different gradations of activity. We see directly what happens when the demons are in charge. When Hiranyakashipu took control, he immediately tried to stop all Brahminical performances. Why? Because he assumed that actually Lord Vishnu is dependent on the sacrifices of the Brahmanas. So he thought, one of the best ways that I can weaken Vishnu before I finally kill him is that I will withdraw his source of energy, which is these Brahmanas. These Brahmanas are constantly doing different yajnas, constantly meditating on him. They give him strength. So this is the demoniac mentality. They stop religious, scriptural, spiritual methods of progression, which are used by all people throughout the world, if they want to advance. Without having some connection to the Lord through some way, no one can actually advance. And this is actually the job of the devotees, to bring the presence of the Lord into a person's life. And that's the tremendous task that Srila Prabhupada has accomplished and is accomplishing through these books. So the Lord naturally favors the demigods because they act on his behalf. And here still, the demigods still do have this tinge of regret when they come to ask the Lord for something. It happens in other pastimes also. Now, obviously they have some desire, which is why they've come. And they're hesitatingly asking him. So now one who approaches the Lord with some material desire, is that person entirely condemned? No? Why would you say he's not condemned? Does the Lord endorse such behavior? He does, in the Gita, right? But he endorses it for certain persons. Chaturvidha bhajante mam, janasukritina arjuna, artha jignasu artha arti jnani cha bharatarshiva. He explains there are four types of pious people who surrender to him. Those who want relief from misery, those who want some wealth, those who are after some kind of knowledge, and those who want some kind of spiritual advancement, some connection to the absolute truth. So these are described as pious, as opposed to the Duskritinas, who don't do these things. So obviously this type of approaching the Lord for some pleasure, it's sanctioned in some limited way. And it's sanctioned because people, living entities in this world, are largely helpless. They are totally under the control of the modes of nature, and most of the time, things are happening outside of their control. As we read in the purport, this verse is quoted, Kshetra gyam chapi mamavidhi sarva kshetra subharata. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki. So the Supreme Lord, He understands everything that is taking place in everyone's bodies, but the individual living entity, at most, can understand what is taking place in their own body. That's the field of activities for that living entity. The Supreme Lord's field, on the other hand, is the entire creation and everything beyond, because He's the source of that creation. So, the reality is that people will always be in need of something in this material world. Because sadly, one being a spiritual person and being totally entrapped in a material body, such a person is never fully satisfied. And there are constant intrigues, difficulties that people experience. So obviously some method has been set up by the Lord whereby people, when they need something, they can attempt to obtain their desires, obtain the fulfillment of their desires through an authorized process. So He makes available this option that you can come to Me. He also explains that surrender to the Lord and approaching the Lord is actually the highest principle, whatever our desires may be. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi. Akama, whether one has no desires at all, whether one is full of material desires, or whether one has desires for liberation, one should approach the Supreme Lord. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So a person who wishes the fulfillment of their desires, whatever they may be, they should engage in the Lord's service in a very focused and attentive way. Tivrena bhakti yogena. So when a person does this, the Lord will award them whatever they want. Now what the different living entities want, that is a whole realm in itself. Generally the devotees do not desire anything material. And generally, those who are not fully pure devotees, they will have material desires. We saw this in the example of, in the sixth canto, the example of Chitraketu. Mother Parvati curses him in his later incarnation, in that incarnation. And he takes birth as Vritrasura, and he engages in a tremendous fight with Lord Indra. Now Indra desires, just as is happening now, he desires to be established again in his rightful position. And Vritrasura is simply looking for liberation from material bondage, from the repeated cycle of birth and death. So both are there on the battlefield. Indra is attempting to kill this great demon, so-called demon, Vritrasura. He's failing. And Vritrasura himself is advising Indra and the demigods how he can be killed. Because he knows that's Lord Vishnu's plan. So Vritrasura, despite being a tremendous demon, tremendously powerful demon, has actually understood that the highest principle in this world is the service of the Lord. And that if the Lord wants to protect, there is nothing anyone can do to override that protection. And if the Lord wants to destroy, no level of protection from anywhere within this world will save one. Except for the protection of a devotee. There's a little pastime of that with Arjuna and Krishna, how they save Maya Dhanava. But those are exceptions. If Krishna wants to kill someone, there is nothing that can be done by anyone in this world. So it's described that the Supreme Lord awarded the results of both of their desires. Indra was given, Indra killed Vritrasura with his thunderbolt weapon, and he was given dominion over the heavenly planets again. However, that in itself was not the real benediction. The real benediction was given to Vritrasura, who actually didn't want this dominion, but he wanted to go back to Godhead. So he said, so it's described that the Lord awarded the results to both parties. The Indra and the demigods continued to rot in this material world, whereas Dhritarasura, although externally vanquished, got the supreme spiritual blissful life. So this is the life that devotees are after. Now the reality is that devotees will still approach the Lord. Devotees, and especially those who are not fully pure devotees, like the demigods. So as this example is there, they approach the Lord, they want that benediction, and the Lord is now going to unleash an entire adventure where he satisfies their desires. Now in this purport, Prabhupada says a number of interesting things, which are specifically meant for us as aspiring pure devotees. Hopefully it's everyone's motivation and aim that we actually want to serve the Lord purely anya abhilashita shunyam, jnana karma dhyanavrita. Hopefully that's our desire, that we want to serve the Lord without any type of material desire, material taint, personal desire, personal wealth, personal ego. That's the goal we're working towards. So for us as practitioners of that, our duty as given by Prabhupada is to execute devotional service sincerely under the direction of the spiritual master. Krishna, by his grace, will supply whatever we need in executing our devotional service. Now this is very interesting. Krishna will supply whatever we need. Does that always happen to us? If we're honest, do we always feel directly that the Lord supplies everything I need? There are several fortunate people for whom that's the case. And several people who, from their own very honest and practical experience, like myself, sometimes think that the Lord doesn't always supply what I need. Now, to think a little actually how the Lord may bring about the fulfillment of our needs. That's very interesting. We like to think of the Lord supplying our needs with some tremendous dramatic display. We would like, just as the Bhaktivedanta players, when they produce a production, the Lord descends with his Sudarshan Chakra, ready to vanquish all our enemies. We would like that to be the case. Sometimes the Lord can do that, as he does with Prahlad Maharaj. Stambhe sabhayam namirgam namanusham. He burst forth from this pillar in a totally dramatic way. That sound itself was tumultuous, that all the demigods, everyone was jolted as if by an earthquake. The Lord can do that. But the Lord also, being situated in everyone's heart, if he actually desires the vanquishing of someone, he can just simply give that person a heart attack. He doesn't actually need to do anything tremendous. Now, on a more practical level, obviously vanquishing a bitter enemy is one thing, but generally that's not such an issue for devotees. Devotees, first of all, try not to create enemies. They are equal to all. Name dvesho stinapriya. They are, you know, friendly to the non-envious and the envious, as the example of the Goswamis is. They try not to create enemies. So that's not so much of an issue, but sometimes in devotees' lives there are situations which need the input of the Lord. And one nice way we can understand this is that the Lord does say that he provides and sustains his devotees. The Lord does actually desire to help the devotees. He does explain, "Ye yathamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham." He does explain, as one surrenders to me, I reward them accordingly. So the Lord has already cut himself a specific role, a job description, in the life of a devotee. A devotee is not progressing along on his own in this very difficult path. The Lord is there to support and guide, externally as the guru and internally as the Supreme Lord himself. So the Lord is there, and the devotees, when they interact with the Lord, the meditation of pure devotees and the meditation of those who are aspiring to be pure devotees is that I am trying to connect to the Lord through prayer. That prayer is not so much a means of a mechanism for me to obtain what I want. It is a method for me to express my desire, my feelings, my situation to the Lord. Because the Lord is my friend, my constant companion. He is everyone's well-wisher and the supreme friend of all living entities. Right? Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam. Suridam sarva bhutanam. He's very close, surid, very close in everyone's heart. Sarva bhutanam, for all the living entities. He's their friend and well-wisher. So the devotee gradually cultivates this interaction with the Lord as the devotional service progresses. And so when a devotee prays to the Lord, first of all, if there is some hint of some desire or some personal ambition, then they first of all regret it. That's the first thing that happens. And the second thing is that they make that petition in a very humble way and just request the Lord to do what is suitable. So they sometimes very apologetically almost come before the Lord and they say, "Dear Lord, I have this desire, but I ultimately know that I don't really need this desire. This desire is just arising and I don't know what to do. Please do the needful." That is actually perhaps the best kind of prayer we can make to the Lord. That we understand that we are not competent to know the correct solution. Hiranyakashipu's personal solution to his problems was to kill Vishnu, and in order to do that he wanted to be the most powerful person. Well, his tremendous power became the source of his tremendous destruction. If actually he had simply been satisfied with what he had. Prahlad Maharaj strongly criticizes him at one point in his wonderful way as a small child would. And he says, from my point of view, there is no point aspiring for anything material. Only foolish persons aspire for something material. Because their senses are uncontrolled, they will never actually be satisfied by material things. One who has not controlled the mind and senses will never be satisfied with any level of material facility, opulence, or whatever. That's the root cause of the problem. So this was a direct expression of Hiranyakashipu's problem. So based on that being his situation, he then attempted in a material way to try to gain more power. Now a devotee doesn't necessarily prescribe to the Lord what they should do. Sometimes they may say to the Lord, My dear Lord, I am so poor. Please give me some money. Well, okay, the devotee may be poor, but it actually may not be the best thing for that devotee to get some money. So in producing our prayers or in offering our grievances or, how can you say, dissatisfactions, whatever they may be, everyone goes through different ups and downs. In offering those to the Lord, the general sort of guideline through these prayers, Dhruva Maharaj, etc., is that we simply present the Lord our problem and we leave the entirety of the solution to Him. The demigods couldn't have conceived that this tremendous leela involving Vasuki the snake, Mandara mountain, an entire ocean, a whole defense pact between the demons and the devotees. This tremendous adventure was about to happen. They had no idea that this would take place. This is simply an adventure created by the Lord. And what a wonderful adventure. He himself engaged in many wonderful activities throughout this entire leela. So the Lord can always act in a certain way that actually fulfills our desires well beyond what we think or we can imagine how they may be fulfilled. Lord is very, very special and totally competent to do whatever is needed for our own devotional lives. So those are a few thoughts from Prabhupada's purport. As Prabhupada says, if we simply execute the order of Krishna and Guru, then all necessities will be supplied by Krishna, even if we do not ask for them. So I'll stop there. If there are any questions, comments, corrections.